Hello, everyone, and welcome to Full Time, where we take you around the world of soccer, locally, regionally, nationally, and internationally. Full Time is presented by the Game Sports Podcast and powered by 91 Network. You're listening to Season 4, Episode 15 of Full Time. I'm your host, Daniel Scarpino, and with me is our co-host, Gaetano Gallo. Before we begin today's show, Full Time is sponsored by Little Caesars Pizza. With their two locations in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, you can download and access the Pizza Portal app so you can enjoy a delicious hot and ready pizza from Little Caesars today. We remind our listeners that recordings of Full Time occur weekly or bi-weekly, and uploads to all of our platforms for public viewing and listening occur weekly or bi-weekly as well. Folks, we are overjoyed to have you with us here on Full Time, where we get to talk about the beautiful game. Gene, how was your Easter, man?
Not too bad. Nice and quiet. Just the way I like it. How about yourself, Scarps?
It was really good, man. Quiet for the most part. Did get to spend some family time Friday night on my dad's side and then Sunday on my mom's side. So, yeah, all was good. And now the long weekend's coming to an end and we're back to the grind tomorrow. And in today's show, what we are going to be talking about is the Champions League, the Europa League, Europe's Big Five, and local and regional soccer. As always, if anyone would like to listen to our previous content, please check us out at Full Time on the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network. And without further ado, Gaetano, and to everyone who has taken the time to tune in here today, let's kick off. We kick off today's show with a preview of the upcoming Champions League quarterfinal matches. Gee, the Champions League is raring to go, and so are we. How are you feeling about the upcoming battle in Europe's best competition at club level?
I'm super excited. I'm excited to see City try and defend the title. I feel like that's not something that's been done very often. I think Real Madrid was last to do it before that. I couldn't even tell you. Maybe right. One of those like early 90s Milan teams. But like, I like City's chances. I like the matchups outside of City's. I think there's some of the best matchups we're going to ever see. Especially, we'll get to them in a bit here. But like, there's some just bangers of matchups. I'm super excited to watch them all.
Yeah, we have nothing to not be excited for, let's put it that way. And what we're going to be doing here and now is we are going to preview each tie in the quarterfinals of this prestigious competition. And first, what we're going to look at is Arsenal versus Bayern. Gee, a bit of a history behind this one, as we good and well know. And personally, I am delighted to be in this position so that we can have a chance, Arsenal, to get into the semifinals, which it's been so long. But the ultimate question here is, what can we look forward to in this tie, and who is going to win it? Go ahead, sir.
So I think we have a ton to look forward to here. I'll start with Arsenal. They've looked great all season, looked great last season. And kind of all signs are pointing in the right direction for them in terms of, how this team is progressing. And this is obviously, probably one of, if not the biggest tests they're going to face this season, and kind of, it's really going to put a sense of, scale of where they are compared to some of the best teams in Europe. I think they're going to be up for that challenge. But on the other side is Bayern Munich, who are one of the best teams in Europe, have not been playing like it this season. And we'll get onto that in a little bit when we talk about the Bundesliga. But I think, we've said it now, like all of their eggs are in the Champions League basket. If there's going to be a time when Bayern Munich kind of turn their season on, step into the next year, it has to be now. And if they do, there are very few teams in Europe that can stop them. I'm torn on this one, because I do feel like there's some, like, Bayern's season isn't just gonna, they're not gonna let the season just slip away and go trophyless. I feel like they're going to make that step. I don't think it's gonna be an easy tie for them, but I think they're gonna squeak this one out over your Arsenal.
Fair enough. And little known fact, and I'm not sure if you know this one either, and I don't know if this is going to sway your decision. Obviously, if you've taken Bayern, that's perfectly fine, because they are a top team, even though they haven't been having a top season. In the first leg, which is hosted at the Emirates, so Arsenal's home stadium, there's to be zero Bayern fans allowed. So, again, that, in my opinion, this is going to be won or lost in the first leg, because if Arsenal can go out and take advantage of that, and again, it's purely circumstantial, but if they could take advantage of that, They could maybe park it in the second leg. They could see themselves over the line, maybe even lose the second leg and still have a bit of an advantage. But if Bayern come there and Arsenal don't take advantage, surely it's going to be Bayern's to win, because second leg away at Bayern's always going to be difficult. So that might be something to think about. I don't know if you want to change your decision or not, if you can stay strong.
So that's the first leg you said, right? Second leg's in Munich?
Yes.
If it was the other way around, I would 100% flip. Yep. But I think the second leg being in Munich, I still think Bayern just edged it. And also, I didn't mention this, Harry Kane loves playing against Arsenal, terrorizing guys for however long he was in the Prem. If there's ever a moment for him to, like, not that he hasn't clicked, he's got like 30 plus goals, but like a moment for him to really kind of, you know, take that big step and be, you know, the guy that Bayern wanted to sign, like now would be the moment.
And you know what? It's so true about Harry Kane, because even in the derbies that Arsenal have beaten Tottenham over the years, Harry Kane always seems to score.
Always. You know,
I have no doubt about it that whether it's first leg, second leg, or both, Harry Kane is going to score. That being said, from my prediction, I think it's going to be incredibly close, probably even closer than most people realize. But that home advantage in the first leg, there's something that speaks to me there, especially just the way that the Emirates have turned around this season. And I talked about it last show with you. I think Arsenal is going to win it narrowly. And I know we're not doing score predictions, but just because it's my team, I think that they'll win over two legs, 4-3. So I think there's going to be goals in this tie between these two great teams, but I am going to take and back my Arsenal. You'll take Bayern. And now what we get to move on to is something that's all about you, and that is Real Madrid against your Manchester City. The past two champions in this competition face off in a battle that is set to entertain the masses. G, please break this tie down for us tactically, and of course, who you believe is going to win it.
Yeah, this is such a tough one. And obviously, like, I'm confident, I've you know, 100% confidence in City, whoever we play. Like, that kind of comes without question, and that's well earned over these past few seasons. But I think Real Madrid, outside of City, are the best team in the Champions League. They just, it's their competition. We've talked about it this year, last year, every year that we've done this podcast. Like, Real Madrid in the Champions League is just, they're different gravy. They find a way to do the impossible. They win, you know, basically every time. This is, I think the winner of this tie wins the competition. Let's put it that way. I really do. I just, both teams are so, so strong. There's depth everywhere. You know, even to say like where this tie is going to be won, whether it's in midfield, in defense, in attack, like it does, not that it doesn't matter, but like there's so much depth and so much quality all around that it's not just a specific like, oh, the midfield battle is going to decide it, you know, Haaland versus Eder Militao. Like, that's not what's going to decide it. Because even if, you know, like Haaland didn't score in last year's semifinals, he was held off the score sheet. City still won. And, you know, in some of the most dominating fashion we've ever seen. So I don't think it's even as simple as that. I just think it sounds like a cop-out, but I think whoever's, you know, quality comes through on the day, like, that's going to be it. Like, if Toni Kroos has an off day, that could be the end of Real Madrid. If Rodri has an off day for City, like, that's the end for us. It's just the finest and narrowest of margins. I think it's going to be a lot closer than last year's. I think it's going to look a lot more like the year before, needing extra time. But I think City are going to go through.
Fair enough. And you analyzed that one beautifully. And you speak to something I think that's so fruitful and pertinent here. And that is that the big names have to turn up, and they've got to produce, and they've got to perform, the likes of Rodri. If he, for example, has an off day, we know that something can go sideways for City. But I did see a statistic, speaking of Rodri, that he hasn't lost at the Etihad in like years or something.
No, he hasn't lost any, and I'm knocking on all of the wood I can right now. He has not lost a professional game. It's 63 in a row, and it's 421 days now as of today. It was 420 days yesterday.
Right. So it's so difficult to go against that. And you take a look at your Manchester City, how good they are. And of course, we have to respect Real Madrid as well. And up until, and I kid you not, up until this weekend, aka yesterday, I had my prediction made. That being said, when I looked at both rosters and I looked at injuries and things like that, I did switch it, admittedly. I did have your Manchester City going through, But just looking at your back line right now, if there's ever going to be a crack in the pavement, if you will, I feel like, and I can't believe I'm saying this about Manchester City, that would be the one time that I say that there might, just might be a crack. I'm going to say that Real Madrid are going to win. And I think it's going to be, like you said, not last year's sort of closeness, if you will, but 2 years ago, extra time type of deal. But I'm going to take Real Madrid. And hopefully for your case, because I don't wish ill upon you, nor do I wish ill upon Manchester City or anybody for that matter. I hope that the guys that are injured can return back, the likes of Walker, Stones. Ake went off, so we're going to talk about a little bit later. So hopefully you guys are fit and ready to go. You're, of course, going to go City. I'm going to go Madrid. PSG will match up against Barcelona in their quarterfinal clash. Gee, it's two teams who are going to want the ball, but someone is going to have to try something different in order to get over the line tactically. Gaetano, what do you expect in this tie, and who's going to get into the next round?
This is a really interesting tie because they're both teams that... Because PSG are winning their Liga right now. Look, they're two teams that should be playing better than they have been. Right. Neither of them have really hit that top gear that we've kind of expect from them at any point this season. So it's really tough in that sense because we've not really seen either of these teams at their kind of best, at their full potential, which we've seen from Arsenal, Munich, City, and Madrid so far. And even Dortmund and Atletico Madrid, we've seen that from them. I think that Barcelona's midfield is going to win this tie for them. I think... Gavi and Pedri have been just spectacular this season, especially considering how young they are. I think that's been huge for them. Frankie de Jong's had kind of a bounce back season. And I look at PSG's midfield, it's good. I don't think it's at that level of Barcelona's. I think that's going to kind of dominate the tie. And I think Barcelona are going to go through.
You know what? We disagreed on the first two picks, and we both gave, in my opinion, quality reasons for it. I don't think I can give any better reasons than the ones that you just gave, because I'm also taking Barcelona. And I'm not saying that it's a one-man show for PSG, because then that kind of diminishes PSG as a club, and I don't want to do that. But if you can focus and dial in on doubling up on Mbappe and making sure that you have traps that are set, for example, half spaces or wherever you want to win the ball back or make him play negative and play backwards, you're pretty much taking care of 75% of the battle. If you're Barcelona, and I think that they've got enough tactical prowess there, like you were talking about Pedri and others, Frankie de Jong too. I think that they have enough there to get themselves over the line. So I'm also gonna go Barcelona. And it will be Atletico versus Dortmund in the last quarterfinal. Gee, it's two teams with two completely different sets of ideas tactically. Who is going to get the better of the other one and move on in this competition?
So this is, again, not none of these ties are easy to predict, but this is so, like, just, I'm trying to, like, find the right word for it. Like, the clash of ideas is just so, like, I haven't seen a tie like this in a very long time, where it's, like, you know, Atletico Madrid's, they're, you know, four, like, two blocks of four, 4-4-2, you know, defend for their lives from the first kickoff, and Dortmund, who just attack for their lives from kickoff. I think Atletico's defensive quality is slightly better than Dortmund's attacking quality. And I think that's going to give them a bit of an edge, but I would not be surprised if, you know, if Dortmund got an early goal or two and the blitz gets kind of started from there, but I am going to go with Atletico Madrid.
Yeah. And you know what? I mean, I've always said it as a coach, coaching competitively 14 years now, that good teams are built back to front and you have to be able to defend first. And I'm not suggesting that Dortmund's going to be naive in any sense of the word, but I think Atletico is just going to be that much smarter. And I think that they're going to be defensively solid. They're going to work on it like crazy. And I think that they are also going to win, and they are going to be taking advantage of Dortmund on the counterattack. And Atletico do have guys that can punish on the counter. So I'm also going to take Atletico. So, G, in terms of our picks, you've got Bayern Munich, Manchester City, Barcelona, and Atletico. So you're having representation there from Germany, England, and two clubs from Spain. For me, I'm taking my Arsenal and then Real Madrid, Barcelona, Atletico. So I've got one team from England essentially against the top three in Spain, more or less. But yeah, I think that this is going to be an absolutely fascinating quarterfinals. I mean, we say it so often, this is going to be the best that we've seen in years. But I think with legitimately how these matchups are, do you actually believe that this might be some of the best ties that we've seen in a quarterfinal in some time?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I don't want to disrespect like other teams that have made it this far or further. But like you look at last year's semifinals, like Napoli were phenomenal, but like Benfica was there. And it's like, again, Benfica had a great year last year, but it's just, it's different when you look at, you know, the last eight teams and you go, these are legitimately eight of the best teams in Europe. Like there's no like, oh, they're good for Portugal or they're good for the Netherlands. Like these are legitimately eight of the best. And also just the way the matchups lined up too. Like, cause I think, you know, if you flip a couple of them, like it's maybe less exciting, but I think we got kind of the perfect blend of like tactical battles and just like, you know, just the name brand recognition battles. Yeah, it's going to be great.
I fully agree with you. And the only one that you could possibly make an argument for is that Inter kind of got left out of it. Yeah. But beyond that, these, like you said, these are eight of the best that we could have had at this time. And how lucky that we are to be able to see them. A reminder to our listeners that the Champions League quarterfinals will commence on April 9th and finish up on April 17th. In our next episode of Full Time, we'll be able to highlight all of the winners for you. Moving it over to another competition in Europe, and that is the Europa League. Gee, some very big names remain in this competition. Can we expect to be excited in this set of quarterfinals just like we are the Champions League?
Like, I don't want to say that they're equal, but I think in, you know, in like relative to the competition, like this is basically the best eight teams we could have got in the Europa League quarterfinals. Like it's, yeah, just incredible quality, like all the way throughout.
Yeah. And there's no team that you're looking at thinking, who, how did they get there? It all seems to make perfect sense, or as close to perfect as we've seen in some time. And similar to the Champions League, we are going to highlight the Europa League quarterfinals here for you all, along with our picks for each matchup. And first, what we're going to do, G, we're going to analyze Liverpool and Atalanta. G, obviously a good bit of quality in this matchup. Who do you think is going to win it?
I don't want them to win it. I've been very vocal about any time that they play, I don't want them to win. But I don't want Liverpool to win. I think they will. I think they just have that just too much quality for Atalanta. Liverpool is kind of starting to get healthy again, which is, you know, not a good thing for either of us.
Right.
But yeah, I just think, you know, if they get their kind of that starting 11, you know, those couple of subs back to being like fully fit, I think they will probably win this, not easily, but it won't be too difficult for them.
Yeah, and I certainly don't want to, use a comparative method, but a European night at Anfield obviously is so much different. And I think that Atalanta are going to be in for a bit of a shock when they turn up there. So I also am going to go with Liverpool. I'm not saying that they're going to win it just because they're playing at Anfield, but I do think that they're the better side. They are getting healthy. They just came off a huge win this weekend, which we're going to talk about here shortly. I think they got the all the ingredients, if you will, to make a wonderful recipe, and that would be to get to the semifinal. So we're both going to take Liverpool. Next, we're going to take a look at Benfica and Marseille. Maybe a tough one to call here, G, but who do you got?
Yeah, this is probably the only one where I didn't look at it and have kind of a clear favorite, and I really had to do some research. But I'm going to lean for Benfica. I think they're just on form. They're having a little bit of a better season, running at a little bit of a higher, in terms of quality, that level. Again, not that Marseille have been bad this year at all. I think they're finishing right now. They're just outside of a European place in Ligue 1. So it's not they're having a bad season. I just think Benfica is just running at a little bit of a higher level right now. And I think they're going to keep that going.
You know what? You make a lot of good points there. And I was really torn with this one, and I had a difficult time deciding. And when I looked on it, I just think that if there's going to be sort of one slip up somewhere in here that you think, oh, there's the upset, I think it actually is going to be Marseille who's going to win it, even though they're kind of flirting around that mid-table outside of the European positions in league. Or I think maybe this is going to be the competition that they really push in, similar to how Sevilla did it all those years. Sometimes, you know, well outside of the European places, but all of a sudden they turn up in the Europa League. I think this is going to be Marseille's, even though Benfica clearly are having a better season in Portugal. And I think right now they're second place. And they might even win that league there. But I'm going to go Marseille. So a bit of a disagreement there with you, but a very difficult tie to call. Next up, we've got an all-Italian clash between Milan and Roma that is set to take place in this quarterfinal and set the footballing world alight. Gaetano, this has to be the matchup that most people are looking forward to. I know I certainly am in the Europa League. But the question is, who is going to get the better of the other?
So this, I struggled with a little bit. Not as much as the previous one. So in their first fixture they met this season, AC Milan won 3-1. And then they have not played actually against each other yet. They are scheduled to play each other in the league soon. I don't know what's going to happen there. I think AC Milan's just got more quality. I think they're similar, like what I said with Benfica, they're just running at a higher level right now. Roma, with the change of manager, have actually looked very good since Mourinho left, which is not something I expected. I thought he was kind of dragging them a little higher than what they were capable of, but they've been kind of kept that level, which is good. I just think Milan's quality is going to see them through here.
And you know what? I'm on the exact same page as you. I think that this is going to be an unbelievable clash because it's two Italian giants. But I also agree that Milan, if you look at the two sides on paper, even though the game's not won on paper, I think that Milan has a better team. I think that they're a better tactical outfit. They did bring in, Roma did, a club legend to replace Mourinho. Maybe that's why they've kind of kept the pace or even elevated a little bit. But I think this is kind of where their run in the Europa League comes to an end. So just like you, I'm also going to say Milan. And finally, we've got Leverkusen and West Ham, who have it all to play for in their quarterfinal. Gaetano, it's not going to be easy for either side, at least I don't think. But who do you have going through?
I really want West Ham to win this. I've always liked them as a club. I don't know. There's something about them I've always liked. You know, I got a soft spot for them, you know. So seeing them win the Conference League last year was amazing. And I would love for them to go on and win the Europa League. But they're running into probably the best team in Europe in Bayer Leverkusen. And I don't see them winning. I think Leverkusen are probably going, you know, depending on the draw for the semi, probably going right to the final. Like we've talked about all year, they are just the best team in Europe. I don't think there's anyone stopping them. And as much as I love West Ham, they're just not stopping them. Leverkusen should win it. It won't be easy, but I think they'll be comfortable.
I think so too. And I have this sort of thought that West Ham, with David Moyes, he is just going to try and keep it tight, compact. But all it takes is Leverkusen to really find one hole, one gap, one sort of crack to expose, and they will do it. And that's all it's going to take, because then the floodgates are going to open. I'm also going Leverkusen, and I think that I think this is time now for West Ham to bow out of this competition and purely focus on trying to get European football through the Premier League with their final eight or so games. So, G, your picks are Liverpool, Benfica, Milan, and Leverkusen. Mine are Liverpool, Marseille, Milan, and Leverkusen. So, really, we only differ in the Benfica-Marseille game. But, again, the Europa League quarterfinals will kick off on April 11th, and they will wrap up on April 18th. And just like the Champions League, we will update you all in our next episode of Full Time with all of the results in this competition. This is Daniel Scarpino and Gaetano Gallo, and you are listening to Full Time on the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network. A reminder that Full Time is sponsored by Little Caesars Pizza. You can download and access the Pizza Portal app for any of the two locations in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. Have a delicious hot and ready pizza from Little Caesars today. G, let's jump over to Europe's Big Five, and we are going to get the ball rolling with the English Premier League. After a weekend of entertaining matches, it's yet another change at the top of the table. Thanks to their victory over Brighton, it's Liverpool who returned to the top with 67 points. And thanks to the draw of 0-0 between Manchester City and Arsenal, Arsenal now moved down into second with 65 points, whereas Manchester City remained third with 64 points. Aston Villa continues to hold fourth place after their victory this weekend. Edging ever closer is Tottenham, who is in fifth with 56 points, but still have a game in hand over the fourth place Aston Villa. G, all of our focus was on your Manchester City and my Arsenal this weekend. And whilst we both wanted our teams to win it, it's shared points at the end of it. Your thoughts on that game, sir?
It was dreadful. It was a waste of 90 minutes. It wasn't a good game. I was shocked at how conservative Arsenal played. Yeah. Especially given that, they're kind of a team on their eyes playing the, back-to-back-to-back defending champions. Like, I thought that, if there was a moment for Arsenal to, go for it and prove, they belong in the title race, I thought that kind of would have been the moment. I thought Mikel Arteta would have had a little more confidence in his, team's ability to go forward and attack. But they just seemed very happy to kind of play in two banks of four, or almost five, basically. For most of the game, I was shocked. I think the biggest difference in the aftermath is looking at Arsenal fans, and not you specifically, just kind of the general aftermath. Arsenal fans super happy with the draw, and City fans super disappointed. Not even just in terms of standings, it doesn't really matter too much at this point. But just the kind of where the bar is set for City, where the bar was set for Arsenal, kind of the difference in the three-time defending champions and the team that hasn't won it since 2003.
Yeah,
3-4. Yeah. I thought it was just, it just wasn't at all what I was expecting from Arsenal, really.
Yeah, neither did I. And it became very apparent and very clear to me, 10 minutes in, that, hey, this is the way that we're going to be playing today. And you know what? It wasn't 4-4-2. It was two banks of five. That's exactly what it was. And there were some parts of that I actually did admire. Like, for example, Kivior, who really isn't much of a left back. You had Gabriel Jesus, who was coming all the way from a striker's position all the way back to the left side of defense for Arsenal, right side of City's attack to double up. Like, there were certain parts of it that I thought, okay, that's different. That's cool. It's working. But basically, it was so simplistic in the sense that ball would, be played across the channels and someone like Jorginho would just drop in. And all of a sudden, it's like a bank of six. Like, there was nowhere for City to go. And Arsenal really didn't have any chances in the game. So yeah, it was dull. It was boring. I was mentally checked out of it a couple of times. It wasn't what I expected, but at the end of the day, it's a point of peace. One thing I'm going to say though, and I don't know if you're going to agree with me on this or not, because I don't really think it has much to do with either team, but I don't want to see Anthony Taylor near another Arsenal game ever again. I know we try and not talk about referees too much on our show, because in the past we did do that a lot. He turned what was supposed to be a Manchester City Arsenal game, he tried to make it about himself. And I've been refereeing for 18, 19 years now, and I could see when a referee does that, I don't want him near another game ever again. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, no. And I'm not just picking on Arsenal players here, because I'm sure you probably could think of City players, but at least two or three Arsenal players should have been on four yellows. It was, funny in a terrible sense to watch, to be like, oh, that's the fourth time Jorginho's fouled you, that's the fifth time Jorginho's fouled you, that's the sixth time. And I got the early ones, letting them play, giving warnings, I love that. Let them play, you don't have to show a yellow in the first 5 minutes on the first foul, it's fine. But after two or three or four or five or six, at some point, that's your job, is to hand out these yellow cards. Yeah, I thought he was just horrific. I didn't even want to mention it, because it was just awful.
And you know what, Gabby Jesus probably should have been booked as well for persistent infringement and these types of things. But here's where two things actually where I got really ticked off at. One, every time he called a foul, it wasn't just, okay, we're going this way. It was a case of he was looking around trying to pick somebody to argue with. So he was looking for something in the game, even though some people were saying, oh, he just let the game flow. No, he didn't actually, because every time that he made a call, he wanted to start in footballing terms a fight with somebody. And the second bit would be consistency. So David Raya got one yellow card for delaying the restart of play. At the time that he gets booked, we're having a substitute come on the field almost simultaneously. So fourth official puts the board down, our player's running on the field, and then all of a sudden he's getting booked. As I can remember one instance in the first half when Guardiol took 10 seconds to throw the ball in, where do you find that? I don't understand.
Yeah, no, he was just all over the place. Just just awful. And speaking of Gvardiol real quick, that was a monster class from him. Like, that's what you pay £100 million for a center back for. Like, that was spectacular. And at like 21, 22, if that's like the floor that we're dealing with, like, his ceiling is going to be just stupid high.
Best player for City on the day, would you say?
Best player on the pitch by a mile. Like, it was, and not that Arsenal players played bad. I think they played well in the way that they were meant to play.
Yeah.
It just wasn't very flashy. And I thought Gvardiol just looked unbelievable.
Because Bernardo Silva and Gabriel, Brazilian, yes, Gabriel defender, I thought that those three players, by far the best, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I mean, Bernardo Silva, that's, like, I know you don't watch every City game, but that's his level, like, all of the time. Yeah. He's just, and I know we're probably going to lose him in the summer, and I'm going to, you know, he is, this is a hill I'm prepared to die on and, like, publicly say this and, like, put it on the internet. He is City's most important player. And he is the most unique player in world football right now. There's nobody who can do everything that he does at the level that he does it. He's just brilliant.
Last season, Pep did say that he was the most important player. This was like earlier in the season. This was like maybe November-ish. But I do remember, or not November, like it was like right before the World Cup, I think, whenever the players.
So November, December.
And he said that too, and I thought, yeah, okay, that might make sense. But then it's like you think about the big names, how does that make sense? But you see the intricacies of his play. You know, he nutmegged Kivior one time, and I was just like, yeah, like you can't teach that. But even the detail in all of his passing and everything, like I just thought he was sublime on the day. Him, Gvardiol, and then Gabriel, of course, for Arsenal. But like you said, wasn't a whole heck of a lot in the game. As an Arsenal fan, I'm not thrilled with 1 point. I'll take it. But I'm not like, oh, yeah, we did it. You know, we didn't really do anything. So there's still a lot to play for this season, of course. And, yeah, the game that we're looking most forward to didn't have a lot in it.
Did you catch Arsenal Fan TV's reaction? Because they celebrated that like a big win.
Yeah, and Rob, I was thinking, because he's always doing the believe thing. You got to believe, you know. There was only a couple of fans on the interviews. Like, there was one guy who said that it felt like a win. I don't know where he got that one from. This is one of the guys that was getting interviewed in studio. And there's only a couple of like sensible responses that, you know what, it's a tie and you just got to take it as a tie. It's, in my opinion, still, I think it's a point gain. I don't think it's 2 points lost, but it's not something that we should be jumping up and down and celebrating for.
Especially with 27 points still to play for. Like, after Bernardo Silva in an interview after the game, he's like, oh, you know, 6-7 games left. Like, there's not a lot. Like, oh, there's 9 actually. Oh, 9? Plenty of time.
Yeah.
Like, there's, and it's like, it's wild to be like, oh, like 9 games. It's like, it's not a lot of time. We're in, you know, the business end of the season, Champions League quarterfinals, like everything's kind of wrapping up. But yeah, like 9 games, a lot can change in 9 games.
Yes. And you know who must be happy is Liverpool. Not, and we're going to talk about them here in a second, but, you know, the focus almost is like kind of off them because everyone's talking about Arsenal City. But even Bernardo Silva said it in that interview. He's like, okay, so, you know, we do need Liverpool to trip up. We need Arsenal to slip up, but we've got to take care of our business. We've got to do our jobs as Manchester City. So again, Liverpool's got to be happy because all the focus seems to be on Arsenal and City.
You know, I still think I'm like looking at the fixture list, you know, Liverpool still have United. They still have a couple tough away trips, one to Palace. Like, those are not easy games to win. And I'm pulling up Arsenal's right now. Yeah, you guys still have Villa, you still have Chelsea. Like, there are points to be dropped. And I believe that for City, too. We have Villa and Palace away back-to-back coming up now. Like, I would not bet money on either of the three teams going 27 for 27. There's going to be points dropped. You know, who drops them when? Different story. You know, that's only for the psychics to tell us. But, like, yeah, I think there's... like a point gained, it still, you know, is points dropped, you know. That's just the reality of it. But like, it's not catastrophic to either City or Arsenal's chances. And I also, it's not kind of a nail in the coffin that Liverpool run away with it now either. I think it's still pretty wide open. This is kind of like, this is best case scenario for the show, kind of middle ground scenario for us individually.
Totally agree with that. And you know, like you said, there's some tricky games in there. But I think both you and Liverpool have to play Aston Villa. Also, both have to play Fulham. And I don't think that they're no joke team either. And Arsenal's got some tough games too. They got the North London Derby. I know Manchester United's having a terrible season, but still got to go to Old Trafford and try and win that one. Liverpool has their Derby against Everton. Like, there's some tough games here in the final sort of 8-9 games. So yeah, lots. Well, 9 games exactly, of course, for each of those 3 teams. But lots to look forward to. And just your comments to you on Liverpool. How do you think that they're looking coming off of international break? Because they did pick up a big win against Brighton. Went down early, like second minute. Danny Welbeck just smashed one into the top corner. I was happy to watch that game. But your thoughts on Liverpool?
Yeah. So I mean, just on the Brighton game. Over the last few years, I've learned to just not get excited when Liverpool go down. Because you just know that they just inevitably come back and win. You know, if it's a goal in like the 10th minute of stoppage time, they get whatever result they need. They just do. I personally don't put any stock in that anymore as a City fan. Those title races where you just like, just focus. I try and just focus on what City can do, and that's all I can. But yeah, they've looked really good. Like we talked about earlier, they're getting back kind of to full fitness, which is not like not good for us.
Nope.
But I also think they were at full fitness to start the year and didn't, you know, play overly well for that first little stretch. So I'm not convinced that they're just going to, you know, turn into 2019 Liverpool and, you know, win every game 4 or 5-0 and run away with it. I think they're setting themselves up well. I also do think that, you know, having to play Europa League probably, well, quarterfinals for sure, probably semifinals and a final, you know, that's just an extra stress on them. Will it, you know, make a big difference? Who knows? They haven't really had seasons where they're kind of competing on all fronts in a long time. The last time was probably 2019 2019-20 when they won the league. So I'm interested to see how kind of a different group handles that, especially with, you know, this being Klopp's last season and all of that added pressure. I'm interested to see how it kind of all boils down to.
Yeah. And their focus, you know, with 3 different competitions now, because they got eliminated from the FA Cup. Their focus really doesn't have to be that dispersed. Like, they're there and they know what they have to focus on. So yeah, they're in the driver's seat now being at the top. But as we know, 9 games remaining for Liverpool, 9 games remaining for Arsenal, 9 games remaining for Manchester City. You folks have got to stay locked in here to full time for consistent and ongoing updates for the biggest title clash and battle for the title in all of Europe. And with lead changes at the top of the table in the Premier League, we also have changes at the bottom of the table. The relegation battle in the Premier League has, in fact, changed yet again. After their draw this weekend, Nottingham Forest have moved outside the relegation zone only on goal difference. And in spite of their 4-point deduction for breaching profitability and sustainability rules due to overspending, as we mentioned in our last show. As things stand, it is Sheffield United at the bottom, Burnley in 19th, and Luton Town in the 18th position. Luton Town were given a bit of a gift, we'll call it, this past weekend. However, they didn't take advantage and find themselves back in the bottom 3 once again. What can you say there?
Yeah, you know, especially given how they started that game against Spurs on the weekend, I think Spurs are still, you know, a mentally fragile team. I think you get, you know, an early goal on them, they do have that tendency to kind of collapse and not be able to pull it back, but they did. They got the result. I just think, you know, I just don't think Luton have what it takes to play in the Premier League. I think it's been pretty evident for most of the season. I don't see a situation where they are kind of able to pull themselves out of this.
Yeah, it's only been flashes.
Yeah, exactly.
Performances here and there, but I say that. Still not a team that you can take lightly. Arsenal have them upcoming in the Premier League. And again, you can't take anybody lightly, especially not this year. But it hasn't been the season that they probably would have hoped coming up. But the way that they've gotten to the Premier League, you totally have to admire. And there's still some hope for them to get out, but it's sort of diminishing with each game that passes. And Gaetano, I did want to make mention of this because no one is really talking about it. Burnley is unbeaten in their last 3 games and are now only 4 points away from escaping the relegation zone when they were more than 8 points out to it just prior to the international break, which is pretty crazy to think about. There's no such thing as a quiet escape in the Premier League, as we know, but when it comes to relegation, do you think that Burnley might have a chance here to escape?
Burnley might have a chance. it's taken them way too long, but you're starting to kind of see the pillars of Vincent Kompany's play like actually paying off. So is it a little too late? Maybe. But like you said, I'm beaten in their last three, a good draw against Chelsea, you know, a big win against Brentford, who are no slouch either. Like, they're starting to like piece all the puzzle pieces together. You're kind of starting to see the picture of what Vincent Kompany wanted from day one. We obviously knew it wasn't going to happen from day one. We thought it would be, you know, 10, 12 games. Unfortunately, it took about 30. But yeah, I think, you know, when I look at that bottom three, if there's a team that's going to kind of put together that string of results, they don't have to all be wins. Draws will be enough, you know, here and there to get them out. That's going to be able to do it. I think they're going to be able to.
Yeah. And it's all a matter of, you know, you almost wonder as a Burnley fan, is it, like you said, is it too little too late? And are we going to kick ourselves at the end of the season thinking, oh, we waited 30 games, you know, 28 games to start this up. But, you know, maybe it's going to be a case of it was just in the nick of time. And again, just like the top of the Premier League, please do stay in tuned in, folks, for the bottom of the Premier League, because in some cases it can be just as entertaining. In Italy, Serie A, Inter remain clear at the top by 14 points, having 79 points to their name, with just having their most recent victory today, coming this afternoon, 2-0. I believe they beat Empoli. Milan is second with 65 points. Juventus, who are winless in their last four, have 59 points. They are in third. And it's Bologna, who are within one single game of Juventus in fourth place, having 57 points. Bologna, I believe, also won today. Mathematically, Inter will require four more victories to secure the title, or three wins and a draw, which would also see them over the line due to their immense goal difference of plus 59. And they've also got eight games to do it. So if you could please speak not just to what's happening in Serie A, but also what Inter continue to showcase domestically.
Yeah, Inter have just found another level. And they've been playing great this whole season, don't get me wrong, but they've kind of found another level. Unfortunate for them, it was after coming out of the Champions League. Right. But yeah, like just unstoppable. Just I don't really think there's a chance that they blow this. If they do, it would be one of the, kind of the biggest collapses that I can think of in any sport. Yeah, they're just juggernauts in Italy right now. And it's so weird to say that and not be talking about Juventus, considering like the era that we grew up in, where it was just like Juve won the league and everyone else played like their own little league. Like, it's wild to see. But yeah, just well-deserved. They've been far and away. Like, it's not even that they're getting like all bunch of like 1-0 results. Like, they've been dominant in the way that they've been winning. It's been great to watch.
It really has been great to watch. And I don't want to say a breath of fresh air, because they did win the title, you know, not that long ago per se. But the way that they've played, similar to how Napoli did it last year, it is a breath of fresh air, because, you know, it's exquisite football. Like you said, had to come maybe after the Champions League, that now they're taking it to another level. But again, I'm sure Inter fans will be happy with a major trophy that inevitably is going to be in their cabinet. Out in Spain's La Liga, there has been one change to the top four after some fixtures today. Real Madrid remain top, of course. Barcelona is still in second. Girona continue to occupy third. And now it's Atletico Madrid who've overtaken Athletic Club and move into fourth place. Gee, Atletico Madrid were on a two-game losing streak heading into their fixture today, but with their victory, they now move themselves into fourth. Is Atletico about to hit form at the right time here, Gee?
Yeah, I think, you know, if there's ever a point in the year that you want to kind of find that extra level, end of March, beginning of April, like it's now or never, right? If you don't do it now, there's no point. Yeah, they are finding that form. A huge game for them coming up, though, next, playing Girona, who are a place above them in the standings and 7 points ahead. You know, I've said a few times that I don't see Girona slipping out of the top four, but if they do manage to lose that game, like, now we're talking a possibility, which would suck, considering how amazing they played all season. But Atletico Madrid, yeah, definitely kind of have turned the corner for their season and are they're rolling right now.
Yeah, it seems to be that they're about to peak at the right time, and that can be scary. Maybe not so much in Spain, because it does look like it'll be Real Madrid who's going to win it. But, I mean, for those in the Champions League, you've got to be a little bit fearful, you'd imagine, if Atletico continue to trend in that upward direction. The Bundesliga in Germany is not officially over, but Bayern Munich manager Thomas Tuchel has officially conceded the title race. According to The Athletic, in a press conference after the Bayern Munich match this past Saturday, in which they lost 2-0 to Dortmund, Thomas Tuchel stated, quote, "Yes, of course the title race is over. This is clear. Naturally, I have no hope anymore. No, no, no. After today's game, I do not need to tell you anything more. How many points behind are we? 13? Congratulations to Leverkusen," end quote. Gaetano, Leverkusen won their game this past weekend to move 13 points clear of second place Bayern Munich. It's also worth mentioning that Stuttgart and Dortmund round out the top four, with RB Leipzig still hanging in there at fifth position. It's a pretty fascinating statement there from Thomas Tuchel to concede the title race with still seven games remaining in the Bundesliga, but I'm really interested to know your thoughts here.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's very rare that you hear a manager just kind of like outwardly state that when it's not like mathematically official yet, but like 13 points, seven games, the way that Bayer Leverkusen have been playing, the way Bayern Munich have been playing, like, I think it would be much worse for him to go out there and, you know, lie to Bayern Munich fans and be like, yeah, like, we're still in the title race. It's still like, we can still, like, no, you can't. Yeah. Like, at some point, you just have to accept the reality of, like, it almost reminds me of when the City Centurion season, when we were like 25 points clear at Christmas.
Yeah.
And like, you had managers saying, like, yeah, like, we're not going to win the league. Like, it's, there's no point of like putting that false hope or like putting up that face of, we can still do it, when you just can't. So is it weird to hear? Yes. But is he wrong? Not really.
No, you almost have to admire him for coming out and saying it just very, in a very clear way, that no, it's done. Congrats to them. Yeah. And, you know, obviously Bayern are going to focus on the Champions League, and I'm not going to poke fun at Bayern because I believe in karma. And if I do that, smash Arsenal in the Champions League. But obviously Leverkusen in a class of their own, we'll call it, this season. And we've been recognizing that for many, many months. And in Ligue 1, not much has changed there, with PSG still leading the way in first place. Brest remains second and Monaco is in third. Gee, after the transfer window closed back at the beginning of February, we were talking a little bit about Lyon having a really difficult season, and that they would need things to change in the back end of the season to have their season count for something. And they have since pulled themselves up to 10th place after being in the relegation battle, if you will, for, you know, a matter of only 2 months ago. So we won't call it a complete turnaround here for Lyon, but they have vastly improved since the transfer window closed. So just interested to hear your thoughts on Lyon.
Yeah, they were, I don't want to say in crisis, but they definitely needed to make moves in January. Something had to change, or they were potentially getting relegated. They made seven transfers incoming. We were kind of split on them. We thought, you know, like, there's a possibility these players kind of, you know, elevate them to what they're expecting. There's a chance that they don't. Obviously, the big one being Benrahma out of West Ham, right, bringing in Nemanja Matic from Rennes. Like, there were some, not big transfers, but like sizable transfers, we'll call them that. And yeah, they've kind of worked exactly how you would want them to work out. You probably, you know, other than, you know, going on a tear and, you know, winning the league, like, this is basically your best case scenario for January transfer business. Like, you were in a terrible spot, made a couple of important signings, and now we're, you know, flirting with mid-table, potentially a Europa League spot. Like, yeah, it's been pretty impressive from them.
I would say so. And like I said, it's not a complete turnaround, but from, like you said, from where they were to where they are now, it's pretty remarkable. And there's still time. They could get a European spot for next season. And wouldn't that be a story to go from, you know, the relegation places all the way up to a European spot? But Lyon, big club, love to see what they're doing there. And definitely, like you said earlier, a soft spot for West Ham. And while I don't really watch too much Ligue 1, to be fair, I do respect a club like Lyon. And now it is time for a local and regional soccer update. For many people in Ontario, after the March break concludes each year, there is a big level of excitement. Better weather, longer days, springtime looming, and summertime is on the horizon. However, for others, it is the excitement of high school soccer that gets so many soccer enthusiasts overjoyed to get back onto the pitch after a long, long winter. As of March 18th, high schools in the city of Sault Ste. Marie and in the various regions of Ontario became eligible to start their tryouts and commence their high school soccer training, in preparation for the upcoming season once outdoor soccer fields are ready and suitable as per weather conditions. Gee, for me personally, this is going to be my sixth season coaching high school soccer, and the buzz that is around the schools in our city as well as the province of Ontario is nothing short of fantastic. How exciting are these times for high school soccer players as well as everyone that is involved in high school soccer, sir?
It's super exciting. It's always the last one to get started, obviously, with, you know, where we live. We can't really be playing soccer in December outdoors anyways. So it's always kind of that, like, it's kind of like the last, like, domino to fall. And then you're like, okay, like, not only just for sports, but now it's like, okay, like, the whole, you know, school year is kind of starting to wrap up. You know, that's kind of around the corner. So it's just a super, super exciting time all around.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And every year around this time, as soon as, you know, the March break ends, and, you know, I started my trials the first day that we were eligible on March 18th. And it's like you just kind of hit the ground running. It's so exciting. And it's so great to see so many high school athletes have the opportunity to be immersed in obviously this beautiful sport that you and I and all of us listening love. And with the season projected to start the week of April 22nd, teams have between now and then to prepare for their upcoming seasons. As always here on Full Time, we'll keep everyone up to speed with all high school soccer updates in both junior and senior divisions. As well, locally, we have indoor soccer, which is concluding here within these next couple of weeks. Youth soccer concludes on April 4th, men's soccer concludes on April 11th, and women's soccer will conclude on April 14th. Gaetano, you and I both won our leagues this year again, which is a huge honor, of course, and we are now in the thick of the playoffs. First, just reflecting on the league, how are you guys feeling to have won the league and to get that first seed in the playoffs as a result?
Yeah, you know, I think we've kind of feel the same way. Winning the league is kind of the bigger test. You know, how can you play over a stretch of 20-odd games compared to, you know, six or seven? Yeah, it's always... it's always great to be competing kind of for the top of the league. It's amazing to win it back to back. So last year was the first time I'd ever won it. This is the second one. So it's super exciting. Unfortunately, the first seed didn't mean anything for us. We lost our first playoff game, but we're going to kind of go on a little run here, the boys, and we're going to go make a push for the final and hopefully go back to back in the playoffs as well.
Yeah. And we're in the exact same position as you guys. And I do totally agree, obviously. In terms of soccer, it's all about the league, and you know, European competitions don't even have playoffs. But because we're in North America, of course, that is what a lot of people will look to. But congrats on winning the league yet again, and on another successful season, sir.
Yeah, and congratulations to yourself, by the way, because again, you guys always win it, but it's always well earned. So congratulations as well.
Thank you very much, sir. And as the indoor soccer season comes to a close here in the next week or so, 2 weeks, if you will, we will keep everyone in the loop for all of the happenings locally at the Northern Community Center. This is Daniel Scarpino and Gaetano Gallo, and you're listening to Full Time on the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network. A reminder that Full Time is sponsored by Little Caesars Pizza. You can download and access the Pizza Portal app for any of the two locations in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. Have a delicious hot and ready pizza from Little Caesars today. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Full Time. As we close out today's show, we want to send our deepest thanks to all of you for spending some time with us here today. G, my brother, well done today, sir.
Yes, thank you again for having me. I'm just still so disappointed that we had to watch that game yesterday. Like, I was so excited. It was going to be so, like, great for the episode, and then it was just awful. But I'm glad we had a phenomenal episode regardless of the result.
Yes, exactly. And we're always making the best of any situation, and definitely glad to be here with you on this wonderful show that we get to do week in, week out. And a reminder to our listeners that the next episode of Full Time will be recorded the week of April 15th, 2024. In that show, we will discuss Europe's Big Five, the outcomes of the quarterfinals in the Champions League and Europa League. We'll also talk about the FA Cup and a little bit more local soccer. As always, we'll keep everyone in the loop with all of the happenings in the world of football. For weekly content, make sure to hit like, follow, and subscribe to all platforms of both the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Podbean. For Gaetano Gallo, my name is Daniel Scarpino, and thank you for tuning in to Full Time. We look forward to seeing you at kickoff next time back here on the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network. Best always.